You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We are here for you Monday through Friday. Thanks for taking us along with you wherever it is that you go on your daily commute or your routine, whatever the hell it is. We're John Corrales, Sam Jam Packard, kicking off the week after the Celtics win a couple of games in a row, beating the Pistons 110-98, beating the Knicks 121-112. We will be talking about a lot. Kyrie Irving's awesome. Jaylen Brown had some interesting comments about your mental state. We're going to talk about Marcus Smart and his return. We're going to talk about Sam's favorite, the Start Tice movement. I got some stuff to say about Zaza Pachulia. And we'll do our big Australian boat, which will not include Aaron Baines this time around, unfortunately.
I think it's only included Aaron Baines once or twice.
Yeah, it hasn't. It hasn't included him much. But before we get to all that, I want to encourage you, if you're not a subscriber, to subscribe to the show wherever you find your podcast. Search for Locked On Celtics. If you are a subscriber, we would really appreciate a five-star rating and a good review, a nice, short, good review. Let people know why they should listen. Think of it like when you're searching for a restaurant on Yelp and it's got a five-star rating and a good review, then you're going to go to that restaurant. Treat us like that. Treat us like that awesome restaurant. The five-star rating, the good review means more people are going to listen, and then we get a little bit more money because we don't want to do this shit for free. So with all that in mind, let's kick it on off. Sam, they started Daniel Tice, and I promised you before the show that I would give you a stat that you would appreciate. And the NBA stats page has really broken down the box score like crazy.
Yeah, they got real weird with it. I like it. They've added so many new categories.
So, Daniel Tice against the Pistons led the Celtics in contested two-point shots with 7 and contested three-point shots. He didn't lead, but he had 3, one behind Horford and Tatum. So he
assuming this is as a defender, not as a shooter.
As a defender. Yes, he did not take all of those contested shots. He, against the Knicks, had another 7 contested two-point shots, which was second only to Al Horford, who was a defensive monster against the Knicks. So he's out there. He's active. He's contesting shots. He's not blocking a ton of them, but you don't have to block them. You just have to change them. So far, Daniel Tice, he didn't start the Pistons game, but he started the Knicks game and showing a little bit of validation for Mr. Sam Jam Packard.
Yeah, it just makes so much more sense to me than Aaron Baines, just because he's a guy who, Baines is clearly a better low post defender just because he's bigger, but I think Tice is just more active. He brings a lot of energy at the off the bench. He can shoot some threes. He can shoot just a little bit. Just has a more range than Aaron Baines, and I think the Knicks game when he did start shows you exactly what you get from starting Tice. You're not expecting him to play really more than 20 or at most 25 minutes a game. The Celtics are clearly a much better team. They have more like depth in the backcourt. They're going to go small. So the majority of the guys, a traditional center is not going to get that many minutes. So why not have the guy just start off the game, a guy like Tice with a bunch of energy, play some very solid defense. It seems to be working out quite well. Then I like bringing Monroe in off the bench. He didn't finish as much as I would have liked in that New York game, but I thought he had some good moments in the post and can expose some smaller defenders. So I just think it makes more sense with the rotation. You start Tice, you get him his 20 minutes, and then you go small and you play with your better lineup. It's just my favorite stat is that the Celtics are 3-0 when they start Tice, because you can't argue with results, although we shouldn't focus on results. But your stats speak more to process, and that it's he's clearly doing a good job out there on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate thing here is Aaron Baines got that elbow injury, and it's going to be interesting to see, because I think Aaron Baines has kind of started to tail off a bit. His production has definitely tailed off. And you know, you wonder if some of it has to do with just the, like everybody else kind of tailed off, and he needed the break as much as anybody else needed the break. But unfortunately, when you are Aaron Baines, you can't afford to tail off as much. And if there another option comes along, then he risks losing a lot of time, especially because he's not coming back next season. There's a very, very, very slim chance that he comes back next season. So the Celtics, on top of trying to figure out a combination that works, and maybe Aaron Baines is or isn't in a combination that works, there's really no need to include him if they think Tice could be a guy that could perform better down the line. So you just start him now, and without any real, push for the finals. You know, if they're not really kind of going all in, balls to the wall to get to the finals, then starting Tice and adding to his developmental progress makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, Baines is, I would agree that he has tailed off, and it's just there were so many games where he ended up taking upwards of like over 8 shots, and it was just like the defense was perfectly fine leaving Aaron Baines open for 12 footers. They can settle for that. I mean, I'm sure they'll also be fine in terms of compared to everyone else on the Celtics roster with Daniel Tice taking those, but it just feels like, one, he has an ability to actually step out and spread the floor and be on the three-point line, which just opens up the offense so much more. And you're just like I agree with you, the development of him. He's still a younger, relatively younger player, and he needs to get just more NBA minutes. So it just, all signs point to Tice. It makes the most sense. And that's why I've been on the Star Tice bandwagon for years now.
Yes, you have been there for a long, long time. So Tice, so far, 2 games, small sample size. Obviously, there's going to be some matchups where it's not going to work. If he's got to face bigger, stronger guys and get pushed around, then it might make more sense to go to Baines or Monroe. I like Monroe off the bench. I just wrote up a whole big thing about his passing. If the Celtics are still trying to figure out exactly how to use Monroe, and I think if they use him in a very similar way to Al Horford, then they could take advantage of a pretty good passer. He's for his size, he's a really good passer. And I think if they are willing to take advantage of that, and a lot of times I saw guys standing around when he had the ball in the post, and I'm just screaming at the TV, cut, do something. He'll find you. So there's still a period of kind of discovering what they can do together and everything with Monroe. So I wouldn't advocate for, I think of all those options, starting Monroe would be my last option if the team is fully healthy. But I think Tice is probably going to slide in there to this starting lineup. It also keeps Marcus Morris on the bench, which I think he's just better on the bench. So just the rotations before the All-Star break and after the All-Star break, Brad Stevens had said, our rotations are going to change a little bit, and maybe this could be one of the things. Starting Tice could be just a feature for the Celtics moving forward, and we'll see. That means, you know, that also means that they're going to start 2 rookies and a second-year player. So that's going to be wild in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, that's when you put it that way, it's not traditional, but I think...
but I will also add that Tice has a lot of professional experience overseas. It's not the same, but it's not like starting Tatum.
Yeah, no, but I think it's going to be a matchup based, because you're right. If they run into a team with like a significant big, really Tice is not the option. There are some moments where Cantor has just really bodied him on Saturday night, but Cantor's so frustratingly good at offensive rebounding, it doesn't really make much sense, but that's like what he does. But I just think that Tice has proved himself, and so I think he You're right. I think Morris is better off the bench. They're going to need his scoring off the bench. If you want to go, I think it's just like a better version of going small. Not that Tice is small, but he's just, because he can stretch the floor, it's kind of like a, it makes more sense to me than starting Morris.
Yeah. Before we continue on to the next player coming back, Marcus Smart, I would like to point out to all of the Locked On Celtics listeners that the Locked On NBA show has gone daily. It used to be just David Locke, founder of the network, hence Locked On. But now
that's where that came from. That was a bad joke, but I
that
had to
was
make
the
it.
The Homer. Oh God, what's the Homer line? Where I've been calling her Crandall. Oh, I'm such an idiot.
Why didn't anyone tell me? Yeah, Lisa comes home and tells him about Principal Skinner and Miss Krabappel.
Miss Krabappel, yeah.
And that's as he goes, wait a minute.
Yeah. So the Locked On NBA Network has gone daily with a bunch of hosts from around the network taking a day. And I have a day. I will be a co-host on the Wednesday show. So every Wednesday morning, there will be a Locked On NBA show with me and Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to try to keep it to a half hour. It's going to be a bite-sized version, just kind of a get you ready for the we'll recap the last night. Quickly, we'll hit a couple of big storylines, get a little bit more in depth, and we'll get you ready for that next day, that night's games. So it's going to be a regular NBA show for your regular rotation. We hope that you enjoy it. So 5 days a week, subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast as well as our podcast. So you get more of me. Yay!
Hooray!
We got more Marcus Smart. That was good. He's important. He's a good player. And
he's quite good.
Yeah. Yeah. He what's that phrase that people always say about Marcus Smart?
He contributes to victory.
He does. That's it. Exactly. We should put that on a t-shirt. against the Knicks, funny, he did it without shooting a three. Shocking. And dunking twice.
And giving up a heave.
And he passed up a heave. I was sitting there just like rubbing my hands like, oh, this is so delicious. Another heave from what? What did he do? I'm sure Marcus Morris was like, wait a minute. I get to shoot this? Another guy who's not afraid to take the heave. But yeah, Smart. I don't know what it was about his fight with that framed photo thing at the hotel, but he's come back like kind of like a more normal basketball player. He shot well. He's shooting like 60-something% in the two games. He's judicious about his shot. He's, I don't know.
Still making crazy plays where he does like pulls off a steal and fast break, like coming around the completely wrong angle. Yeah. I think it's like, it's hard to tease out what is Marcus Smart and what is the players having a complete week off. But after the Knicks game on Saturday night, Brad Stevens talked about the two games coming back at the All-Star break and about how much more effort and energy that the team played with and just like the fight and competitiveness. And clearly being off for a week works, and I think we'll talk about kind of the mental side of that later with some Jaylen Brown quotes. But adding Marcus Smart back to the lineup is just doesn't, like, I feel like I've been on so many rants about this talking in his absence. He's just such a high energy guy, and that he has to inspire you to play harder if you're next to him, just because you see him going balls to the wall and diving on the ground. It's just like, of course you're going to play that much harder. So, I mean, I'm going to say it's 50% Marcus Smart's return and 50% the All-Star break, but the team just feels like it's playing with a lot more energy in these last two games.
Yeah, and we've spoken about Marcus Smart for so much. We are seeing a couple of things. I think you're right on with that. A bunch of guys have come back energized, and the addition of Marcus Smart kind of ups that a little bit. So I'm not going to rehash all of the things that I said about Marcus Smart. I'm just going to say that those seem to be accurate, that Marcus Smart has come back and guys have kind of picked up their pace at the same time. And they will, to a man, say that Marcus Smart is super important to the team. Kyrie Irving said it last night after the game, saying that Marcus Smart is, I'll just read the quote. It's just an appreciation of Marcus Smart, just implementing him and him just putting his stamp on the and identity on our team as well. Just makes a lot of other guys' jobs a lot easier because he covers up a lot of mistakes, as well as playing with unbelievable awareness on both ends of the floor. He understands spacing, understands the little things that matter, putting a full 48-minute game together. And that's true. I think the covering for other people's mistakes thing is a huge part of it. You know that Smart is going to – he's just crazy enough to put himself and put his body in harm's way. So you feel a little bit better having Marcus Smart out there. But I just remember earlier in the season that Brad Stevens saying, Marcus knows everything that we're trying to do on the floor. And I don't think we give him enough credit as a cerebral player. And we talk about his fire and ability to do crazy things and put himself at total physical risk. But he understands what's happening on the floor and why he does those crazy things, because he's mentally into the game and he is able to kind of figure out where the ball is going to be, where players are going to go. So he puts himself in those positions to make those crazy plays. So all of that being said, it's Marcus Smart is super damn important to this team.
Yeah, the thing about his, I can think about it most with offensive rebounding, but he does have this sixth sense of knowing where the ball's going to be and knowing where he needs to be just to make things happen. So like he does have that physical willingness to just go balls to the wall, but also just has this knowledge of where the ball's going to be and figures things out. So yeah, we really don't give him enough credit for kind of those intangibles and just that kind of, I guess, mental. It's physical because of the combat muscles, obviously, but it's also a mental toughness that he brings to the team that I just think is kind of underrated as well.
Let's move forward and talk about, since we're talking about this mental aspect, let's bring in Jaylen Brown, who on The Undefeated, if you go to The Undefeated's website or go to RedsArmy.com, and I put it on the Sunday morning dump where Jaylen Brown kind of went behind the scenes with The Undefeated to show you All-Star Weekend a little bit, not the whole All-Star Weekend, just from his perspective, which a couple of interesting things was just how many obligations that he had, different interview things and places he needed to be, some fun interaction with him and Jason Tatum and some of the other guys on the floor. But he seemed to take like the entire All-Star Weekend. He didn't go to the game. He didn't go to the skills stuff. He was basically in Malibu. And one of the things that he said, which I found very interesting, is that he needed the break to get himself right mentally. And if you go towards the end of that video when he's talking about this, you see that he talks about the kind of toll, the mental toll that the season takes on top of the physical toll. And that by the end, before they went into the All-Star break, that was weighing on him. And so I think we always just kind of say, people, fans always say, these guys, you know, they're young, whatever. They go out and they play. They're just running around and jumping and you rest and you get up and you go, you do it again. But the human brain is the human brain. And whether your body can run faster or jump higher than everybody else, the brain is basically the same and it gets fried. You do the same thing over and over again. You're traveling, you're sleeping at weird times, you're sleeping in a bunch of different places. You're preparing for a game against the Cavs, and next thing you know, you're preparing for a game against Houston, and it's different teams and different matchups and different things. And on top of it, your own game that you got to work on, integrating new teammates, different obligations that you have outside of the team. It can be a lot, and to have a few days at the All-Star break to just relax, that's huge. You think about it. How many vacations do people take throughout the year? How many long weekends do people take to just say, I need to take a goddamn break? And teams, NBA teams, they don't really have that. They have the All-Star break and then they have their offseason. So really interesting. And you can tell, I think, by their performance coming back, how that kind of manifested itself, because they definitely look more engaged in the past couple of nights.
And it's interesting to hear Jaylen Brown talk about it, just also in the context of, there's a recent Paul Flannery article about Jaylen doing a lot of like meditation and visualization in his rookie year. And it's just like, you can do like, even someone who's like does all this meditation and you think all these things would help out with the grind of the season. You just still need that break. Like, I feel like I needed a break from NBA basketball during the All-Star break. It was nice. I would have liked games to have started earlier, but it was just like, it was nice to get out of the routine of watching basketball every single night and take a few days off. So it's just interesting to see how like sophisticated and how mature Jaylen Brown is at such a young age. And just like, he's already understands kind of things about the game that you wouldn't expect someone from his age. And it's just, everyone you talk to about him just is kind of raves about how special of a, just a, not just a basketball player and not just like a thinker, but as just like a human who's just like very thoughtful. And so it makes sense that like he's a guy who kind of understands it, and that just needing that break, hopefully that's a good thing for the Celtics, because they were playing like dog shit towards the end of that the first half of the season. I guess it's not even really the first half, but the last 2 weeks before the All-Star break, they really looked like they're a team that needed just to think about something else or just to rest. And so with kind of this short sprint here for the playoffs, maybe the All-Star break is exactly what the Celtics needed, both physically and just kind of that mentally, to kind of regroup, figure out what's going on, and to kind of hopefully just keep getting a little bit better as they head into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it lends an interesting perspective. And on top of all that, he mentioned at the very end, the one player who's asked, the one player in the league who he hated guarding the most. I'm going to put you on the spot if you take a guess, but I guarantee you won't get it.
But okay, so like, it's not LeBron James. No. Giannis?
No. No.
I got nothing.
You would think like that, and the reason I put you on the spot is because you would think it's like one of those guys, like when he was saying it in the video, I'm like, it's got to be like James Harden or something, right? No. Marco Bellinelli.
What?
Marco Bellinelli. He hates guarding Marco Bellinelli because Bellinelli is so active at all times, even when he's not involved in the play. He's always trying to juke you and fake you out and make you think he's in the play, and he kind of keeps your mind occupied at all times. So he says it at the end. It's really funny. You got to see the video. He's with such disdain at the very end of the video. He's like, I hate guarding him. It's hilarious.
That is unexpected. Also, like, you, when you think of like shooting guards who run around picks and are constantly active, like the first guy that comes to mind is like JJ Redick. It's not sure. Marco Bellinelli. So
yeah,
that is surprising.
It's very surprising. Okay. I want to get, before we get to the boat, I want to get to this Zaza Pachulia thing. I got to mention, I've got to talk about it, because he is such a, he's not a clumsy goof who just fell down on Russell Westbrook's legs. That, if you haven't seen the video, it's all, just Google Zaza and Westbrook. In the game last night, Saturday night, it's OKC and Golden State, obviously. Those are the teams they play for. So, you know, it'd be odd. It'd be really odd if it was, you know,
Portland. If it was a Magic game.
Yeah, it was like, wow.
Then you would say it's really intentional because Zaza.
That's, yeah, flying out of the stands like it was a WWE event. But so there was a little, I forget who it was. It was, Swaggy fucking fell and Westbrook fell, and Zaza kind of looked like he sort of tripped, but he could have kind of kept his balance, but he saw an opportunity to fall on top of Westbrook's knees, legs, lower legs. And he took it, and he felt like he, if you see the video, I look at it as he kind of got tripped up a little bit, and then he said, oh, well, there's Westbrook. I'm just going to fall on top of him since I got the opportunity. And he did, and he kind of chose his path, and he made it look like he was trying to block his fall, but he didn't. He just kind of laid his entire body on Westbrook. And Westbrook did actually get kind of dinged on the play, but he didn't get injured. After the game, he and Paul George, Westbrook and Paul George, were both asked about it. Paul George is a little more diplomatic, but definitely called it intentional. Westbrook was like, don't ask me stupid questions. It was definitely intentional. Like, pissed off because he had a guy landing on his knees and ankles, like trying to hurt him. I don't know what else to say other than that this guy, like, there's got to be a way to get him out of the league. There's got to be a way to get Zaza out, because last year he hurt Kawhi Leonard. This year he's trying to go after Westbrook. And if he has an opportunity to go after somebody else, if Al Horford's on the floor and Pachulia has an opportunity to go at his knee, he will. He will try to take somebody out because that's what he always does. And I am sick of it. Sick of Pachulia, and it's just enough. He's not clumsy. It was not a big goofy guy falling. That was intentional, 100% intentional. And I will add on top of it, Steve Kerr is always out there, rightly so, talking about moral issues that involve our country as a whole. This is not a basketball play. This is a guy intending to hurt somebody else. If Steve Kerr is going to take that stand and be a guy that's willing to talk about what's right and what's wrong, he's got to be able to sit there and say to this guy and take a stand against his own player and say, you can't go out there and try to hurt people. You can't go out there and throw Zaza Pachulia out there and say, oh, I don't know, looks like he's clumsy to me. I don't know. You can't play dumb. You can't, because this is people's careers. If he had landed on Russ just an inch another way, if he'd actually done some damage, then what? Then Russ's career is in jeopardy. And yeah, he's made a ton of money. He's going to get paid whatever money he's owed. But that's, you can't take away somebody's livelihood.
No, and it's frustrating with Zaza because it's such a pattern of, like, he has a history of doing this. And I don't think he, like, intentionally fell, but I feel like once he saw there was contact, he embraced more contact with Russell Westbrook. And the Steve Kerr point is an interesting one, because you're right, he is a guy who likes to come out and speak, but it's very hard when it's your own player, and you'd like to believe that he's not doing things intentionally, especially if it's your own player. Like, I feel like most Celtics fans chose to believe that Kelly Olynyk was just had the body of a newborn deer and didn't have any malice in his actions. And I still kind of think that, but with Zaza, it just becomes one play after another. And it really puts Steve Kerr in a tough position, because you don't want to accuse your own player of being dirty. It's like, so I don't know. If I was Steve Kerr, I have no idea how I'd react to that, because I feel like you could completely lose a player if the player genuinely doesn't think he's doing anything dirty and his head coach says, you know what, like, you got to cut that stuff out. I don't know. It's an odd dynamic that Steve Kerr has to deal with, and it's just a dynamic the league has to deal with. And I wouldn't be surprised if Zaza was fined or something, but no, it's kind of, I don't remember another player like this who just had, like, play after play after play where just it was kind of clear that it was just, he was being just reckless with his body, reckless in an attempt to just contact. It's not like he was saying he wanted to injure Westbrook, or I don't even think he wanted to injure Kawhi Leonard, but just thought, if I put my body in this place, there's going to be some contact, and who knows what's going to happen. And that's just, it's reckless, and it's like a bad for the game.
That's the big thing. He's trying, right? If you're trying to hurt somebody, I guess you could do something a little bit different. He's putting himself in a position to hurt people. Like, I'm going to do this, and there's a great chance that I could hurt this guy and get him out of the game. And maybe he's not trying to tear an ACL or break an ankle, but he could. And he's putting himself in that position, and he does it all the time. And it's definitely intentional. You can't tell me he's not a good basketball player, but he's still an NBA basketball player. He's in better control of his body than that. But you know what he's great at? His greatest skill is plausible deniability. That's his greatest skill. It's that ability to make this even a debate, to have people tweet and be like, nah, I think he's just a goof. No. He's good at this, but don't fall for this bullshit. Zaza's dirty, and the league has to do something about him, because if it's not Westbrook, it's going to be somebody else. And at some point, this is just, it's enough. Enough is enough. Something has to be done. I don't know what. I'm not able to propose an actual solution, because the league's punishment, I don't know what the league can do to punish a guy for this. Suspend him, hopefully. I would hope that maybe they can use all of these awesome camera angles that get their crazy hustle stats. Maybe they could put together a little Zapruder film that can be like, no, he didn't. This is actually intentional. And then you can ding him for a week or fine him a ton of money or whatever. You can't have players out there trying to hurt other players. bad for the product, bad for the league's reputation. Can't do it. Okay. We're going to wrap this up here with the big Australian boat. Baines, big
Australian
boat. Hey,
come on down. It's always fun having a boat. When I first thought of this segment, I thought I was going to be doing an Australian accent every single time, and I really got away from that, so I'm trying to bring it back after the All-Star break. I've taken my day off, my time off. I have recharged mentally, and now I can talk about coming down big Australian boat. Drinking some beers, having a good time, hanging out with Aaron Baines. Come on down. It's so bad.
That is so horrible. Borderline offensive.
Shout out to our friends in Melbourne.
I feel like I need to apologize to all of the Australian listeners for this. But let's make this, because I'm going to start with the one guy we haven't talked about yet, and that's Kyrie Irving, who was just insane against the Knicks, and this is our chance to talk about Kyrie Irving. But I don't know what there really is to say other than he's just fucking phenomenal. An okay game against Detroit, but against the Knicks, man, he just went up another notch. 31 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, flirted with that triple-double, shot 50% from the field across the board, shot 50% from three, 75% from the line, just an almost perfect game offensively for Kyrie Irving. So he is definitely on the boat.
Oh, yeah, he's driving the boat. That Knicks game was insane. It just feels like when he's hitting from three, when he can pull up and hit the casual fuck you three, it makes the Celtics offense so much more dynamic. And it's like that's when you see Kyrie getting up into 30 points. But there was this one floater that he had, I think it was in the second quarter against the Knicks, where he like switched hands in the lane and had really no business making it, like a left-handed floater. And he just makes this crazy finish like that every single game. It's insane. We've run out of like ways to describe it, but he is such a good scorer of the basketball. It's so much like the Celtics really needed it against the Knicks. The Knicks were pesky last night. Yes, it was last night. But I think it really is dependent on his volume scoring is dependent on that 3-point shot. And so sometimes people can get really, I guess, not upset, but annoyed by Kyrie's shot selection. But the guy, you just got to let the guy shoot, because sometimes he's just going to be making those threes, and that's when he really is able to put up some wild numbers. So he's insane. He's just damn impressive. So he definitely deserves the first place on the boat.
I agree. All right, you're up.
Jaylen Brown, come on down.
Yeah, baby.
He talk about aggressive and like coming out. He got that rest in All-Star break, and he was just attacking the basket. I think in both games, he's just done a good job of playing solid, aggressive offense, and that's when he's at his best, is when he's basically trying to, every time he catches the ball, he's trying to get to the rack. And when he has an open shot, he's not hesitant to kind of take the open three, so that helps people close out on him hard, and he's just been doing a very good job of finishing through contact. I think that's part of his game that has improved the most this season, or one aspect of his game is that his ability to take that initial contact and still go up strong. He has some impressive and ones. He's still just a phenomenal athlete and a crazy dunker, and had that cool play from Kyrie. Them two combined from a crazy all-seeing eye Illuminati celebration, so they both need to be on the boat.
That's hilarious. They will have to do that like every 5 minutes to each other.
I'm sure. And he's probably the Jaylen Brown after me is probably the second biggest fan of the Yabu Dab. So,
oh my God,
points there. He gets so excited.
He gets very, very excited for the Yabu Dab. I'm going to go with Daniel Theis for my third choice. You know, I was actually considering giving it to somebody else, but you know, just so you could say Daniel Theis, but I can't overlook his impact. The Pistons game was his big statistical game, where he had a career high 19 points to go along with 5 rebounds and 7 assists. Not a big statistical game against the Knicks necessarily, but like I said, he challenged a ton of shots. He was out there just active, and it helped set the rotation. So I think Theis, for that contribution and joining the starting lineup, definitely gets on the boat.
I would agree. Start Theis. Next person on the boat for me is Al Horford, because despite not maybe having his two best offensive games, he's a menace on the defensive end. He's so active, and it's just something when you watch it game in, game out, he feels like he's doing everything. I don't know the stats, and I could probably look them up while I'm speaking, but I'm not going to, because I'm going to just shoot from the hip. But it feels like his blocks are just up this year. He does an amazing job, and I thought it was interesting when Kyrie was going off just in that Knicks game. They would run Kyrie and Al pick and rolls, and both defenders would kind of drop because Kyrie was hot and they had to focus on him. And Al's ability to knock down that three when he's open at the top of the key, like pop after a pick and roll from Kyrie and knock it down. It's just, I don't know if you're a defense, what you do to kind of stop that. So Al gets in for his ability to make threes and his just stellar defense, which continues to be great.
His blocks are steady.
You know what? But if they feel like they're up, that's why I didn't want to check, because I didn't know if they were up, but they feel like they're up.
They feel like they're up. They are pretty, but he is. He's still making a big impact, and I have not checked any other stats. I just quickly rolled over to those, but you know, challenging shots and stuff like that. Like his defense, there's a reason why Al Horford is amongst the people considered for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know if he's going to get it, but he should definitely get consideration. I thought against the Knicks, he had some really just great defensive plays, and it probably feels like those blocks were up because he had three against the Knicks, and you saw that, and he had 13 points, 10 rebounds, and those three blocks against the Knicks. So, yeah, he's just a menace. I think he makes things so difficult for other teams, because you run that pick and roll with him and Kyrie, and just, what do you do? What could you possibly? How do you defend that? So, definitely. I'm gonna put Marcus Smart on the boat for sure, because his return, as we said, has made a big impact. And if for nothing else, two dunks in quick succession against the
explosive Knicks. Dunks that, yeah, only a slim Marcus could make.
Yes. So
he must have eaten so much Mediterranean food and dates over the All-Star break, because he was bouncy.
Yes, he was. So Marcus Smart gets on the boat.
I would have to agree. We're having a boat party, because I'm going to add one more person.
Woo.
Terry Rozier. Okay. Now, my one reason is because I saw this stat, tweeted from Celtic Stats, the Twitter account they have. 10 games, he's had over 10 points for his last 10 games. And that included his crazy stretch where he had his triple-double and his 31, but he's been a consistent scorer ever since he's gotten that opportunity. We've seen him do it in two games with the return of Marcus Smart. I just think that he, while he hasn't been a outstanding player, I think he's been a very, very solid bench contributor. And the ability to have him and Marcus Smart on your bench, and sometimes you can roll with one of them, two of them. Sometimes you can do a three guards with Kyrie. Sometimes you go crazy and put Shane Larkin in there, and it was nice to see him return. But Shane, you don't get on the boat, not this week. I don't know. I just think Terry deserves some credit for consistent, solid performance and just putting up, like, still making threes at a pretty good clip and still giving the bench, like, bench scoring. How often have we talked about bench scoring? If you're going to get more than 10 points a game from Terry Rozier, that's boat worthy.
It is. And to just, for accuracy's sake, the Twitter account is @Celtics_stats. And the tweet from last night is, Terry Rozier has now scored in double figures in a career best 10 consecutive games dating back to January 31st. So good for Tito. I'm still calling him Tito.
I actually looked up stats myself. Over those 10 games, he's been averaging 15 points a game, shooting 46% from three. Like that, that's clearly boat worthy.
Definitely boat worthy.
Five rebounds, 4.5 assists. He almost had a putback dunk against the Knicks, which would have been insane.
I was kind of expecting that. That was wild. That was wild. Tito definitely gets on. And I think he gets on for hawking those scary Terry shirts.
Oh my God, they're so cool.
Retweeting everybody who tweet. If you get one of those, retweet from a pro athlete, just get one of those shirts. Just send a picture to Terry Rozier and he will retweet you for sure.
When I interviewed Coley on last Thursday, he was wearing one of those.
Was he?
One of those hoodies.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned it. You did mention it in the interview.
It was terribly cool. I was like very much debating whether or not to get one. I just don't think I could pull off a white hoodie. I would get it like spilled juice on it very quickly, and then that's not scary Terry whatsoever.
No,
the good thing about Terry Rozier is he also will retweet crudely done photoshops of the Scream mask over his face. I did see that. Like, not even the t-shirt, just like someone had spent maybe 6 minutes finding the Scream, like the mask from Scream, and then putting it on a photo of Terry Rozier, and he retweeted the hell out of it. So
it's just like one of those boxes that people just crop off and just drop it in without erasing any of the edges. Just a picture.
It's exactly that. Just Terry Rozier for his continued presence on Twitter is fantastic.
He is something. He is something. All right. That's going to be the show. Appreciate everybody tuning in, downloading. If you are not a subscriber, please, come on, listen to this show. Look what you just listened to. That's subscription worthy. So hit that subscribe button wherever you find your podcasts. If you are a subscriber, again, a good review and a 5-star rating is a huge, huge help. Pushes us up the rankings and gets more listeners. The more listeners we have, the more advertisers we have, the more money we make, and the more often we get to do this show, we get to do it for a little bit longer. So do that. And share the podcast. Let the world know that they should be listening to us, the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.